I'm standing on top of the stairs at the Union Buildings. On my left, there is a group of tourists taking a photo of the buildings itself. On my right, a couple is sitting on the stairs, hand in hand, whispering sweet nothings to each other. In front of me is Sunnyside and Arcadia, two of the oldest suburbs in Pretoria. Taxis and cars drift by the Sheraton Hotel, and there is this amazing energy about the city. We are a melting pot of beautiful and diverse cultures, and the African sun is smiling down on the 012. While I'm here, though, I can't help but think of Pretoria's past. The history that is attached to this city is at times that of heartache and pain. Something that I've noticed during this year, particularly during the hashtag MeToo and gender-based violence protests, is that we as young people only talk about issues and concerns when something negative or topical happens. There needs to be a catalyst in order to spark a conversation. Now, as a community-based radio station, I feel as though Tux FM needs to change that. We need to spark the conversations ourselves, and we need to be talking about the issues that affect us. Again, I think back to the history of the city. I think back to a time where people were segregated based on the color of their skins. Today, we live in an age where identity is one of the most important things that we talk about. And yet, I don't think we talk about our cultural identities enough. I love the city. I love living in the city. I love being part of the city's culture. And I love the 012. But I can't ignore the stigma and misconception that people have of the city. The misconception that a large portion of the city is racist. I can't ignore the city's past. I can't ignore the fact that the city's past will affect the people of the city for generations to come. Or will it? I want to go on a journey exploring this topic. I want to ask the question, is Pretoria a racist city? I want to explore how young people are addressing race and culture. I want to explore the vast cultural beauty of the 012. This is the first episode in a series of audio documentaries exploring the 012. This is 012, Are We Racist?
Tux FM 107.2, it's about you. It's about me. It's about now.
I've made a conscious effort to avoid the extremes of this topic. I'm not interested in exploring hateful, negative people because I truly believe that ordinary people in Pretoria don't actually live their lives like that. I want to hear from a group of regular, everyday people, people who deal with race and culture in their own unique way. I want to hear from you. To get a better understanding of what to expect, I need to understand exactly what racism is. What does the concept mean? What does racism do? And why do we as human beings behave in that way? My first stop is talking to a psychologist. I sat down with Pierre Brouard, who's the deputy director of the Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender right here at the University of Pretoria. So Pierre, the first question that I've got is what is it mentally that makes us look at other people and makes us look at the color of other people's skin and react in certain ways to that? What is it? What is the condition? Help me understand what our brains do when it comes to racism.
Okay, so I suppose the starting point would be that nobody is born racist,
right,
or sexist or homophobic or xenophobic. So it is clearly something that is a learned behavior. And that behavior is learned from our families, our communities, the social setting in which we grew up, the political context in which we grew up. So, for example, you know, I'm a white South African of a certain older age. I grew up in the deepest, darkest years of apartheid. Even if I could say that I grew up in a home that wasn't overtly racist, the system in which I was steeped was racist. It decided that black people were inferior, and that inferiority was reproduced by the state through the laws, through social norms, through forms of inequality. And so therefore, as an ordinary person, all of that sort of seeps into my psyche. What could complicate this is we could say that we, as human beings, we are also designed to discern or to discriminate. When I say discriminate, I mean to distinguish between one thing and another.
Right. So,
I mean, for example, a baby has to learn that this is my mother and my father, not a stranger. I can trust them. So we learn to pick up cues to decide, is this person someone I can trust? Is this person someone I should fear? And I think then what racism does is it decides or creates this idea that people who are of a darker skin color, who are black, are inferior. And then it reproduces the idea in multiple ways, as I've suggested, and then the individual internalizes that understanding and then expresses their racism in multiple ways.
Okay, so I just want to get a better understanding of what you mean by you learn from your environment. I grew up in a hugely liberal household, and I imagine I'm going to raise my children in a hugely liberal household as well. What is it about this learned behavior that continues? How is it that you have generation one passing this down to generation two, and generation two not intrinsically or not being able to say, hang on, this is wrong. I don't want to behave or act like this in a certain way. How does that happen? How do we learn to discriminate against someone?
Well, we learn by what we see. You know, so going back to my own story, if I grew up in a system where black South Africans were excluded from geographic spaces, from living in white areas, their work, the kind of work they could do was work like gardeners and laborers and domestic workers. So you see that they are black people were cast in positions of inferiority, and the apartheid system deliberately undereducated black people. It was an explicit goal of apartheid. So you almost unconsciously take in this idea that, well, black people can't be doctors and engineers and CEOs, because you don't see that. So it just sort of naturalizes the idea that, well, black people are X rather than capable of being Y. So that's one thing. It's what you see. It's what you pick up in media, you know, what you read in newspapers, how black bodies and black stories are represented and described in newspapers, on radio and in television. And then it would be what you see or hear your parents saying. And even not only what they might be saying overtly, but is also what they're not saying that you learn from. So you pick up cues in subtle ways. So racism isn't only about, I suppose, the explicit utterances which are harmful or pejorative, but it can be subtle ways in which people are, stories are invalidated, they are put down or ignored in some way.
Okay, so Pierre raises some very valid points, but the majority of what he was talking about was looking at an apartheid sort of era South Africa. What about the born frees? What about people who have never been exposed to systematic racism? What about people who did not grow up during the apartheid era? What about you? You're a young person. You didn't grow up in apartheid necessarily. Let's sit down and talk to somebody like you. I've sat down with a young lady by the name of Ashley and her friend Zee. They are two young graduates from the University of Pretoria who are not initially from Pretoria, but have studied and graduated from UP. Let's take a listen to what they had to say about this. Okay, so I'm very interested to hear from the two of you. What was your perception of Pretoria before you moved to Pretoria? Like, and I'm talking specifically when you were in high school. Like, what did you think of Pretoria coming from Joburg and coming from a city that is completely different to Pretoria?
I think neither of us... Between the two of us, we didn't expect to come here. It was quite last minute for both of us. And for me, finding accommodation was last minute, literally 2 days before starting varsity. And I thought it was a very dry, very Afrikaans. To put it quite frankly, we thought it was quite backward.
Yeah.
So would you say that in the back of your mind, you thought that it might be a bit racist?
Yes.
Okay. So your perception of Pretoria before you came here is that this might be a racist area, right?
Yes,
definitely.
Okay,
agree.
And this is one of the points about this documentary. I don't think that it's a place specific. Mm. I think that there are racists in all sorts of places in the world, and I don't think that it's. I think that the misconception and the bubble that I want to burst here is that Pretoria is not a racist place. There are racists in Pretoria, but Pretoria is not a racist place.
Yeah, I agree.
I can agree with that.
Okay, so let's talk about going out in Pretoria. You go to a place, you listen to a specific kind of music, you drink a certain kind of drink. As a student, it's easy to do that.
Yes.
Do you think it's easier to go out in Pretoria to a place where everybody, you know, just gets on with it and is there for the party, as opposed to a place like Cape Town or Joburg?
Some places have predominantly Afrikaans people, or predominantly black people. So if you're of a different race or don't speak that language, you will be made to stick out to a certain extent.
Okay. Mm.
There are some places where, like you said, it's an equal playing field. Nobody really cares. They're just there for the music, having fun with friends. But again, you'll have one person who triggers a whole situation, a racial situation,
right,
and it makes it unpleasant. That hasn't happened very often to me, but I feel like it has happened to a lot of other people that I know of. But it's never been something I'm afraid of happening every single night out. It's just maybe one person that will say something really out of place, call you a bad word, and you have to kind of not associate it with the place,
yeah,
but
you
rather
have to detach it.
So it's more to do with the people, like you're saying, than the place itself.
Something that Z said made me review whether or not I'm on the right path here. Maybe I shouldn't be focusing on race. Maybe I should be looking at language. And one of the biggest things about Pretoria is that we have a massive Afrikaans community in Pretoria. And nothing says Afrikaans more than Fokof Polisiekar. More importantly, the bar that is on Linwood Road called Fokof Bar. I sat down with the owner, Rob, because I want to discuss whether or not language plays a big deal in the way in which he puts together a party. I want to know what makes Rob tick. I want to know what he likes.
What I've liked has always been super diverse for me. I've always managed to mingle with people from any background, any race, any culture. And it seems like we've kind of missed the divisive era. And I'm 32 now, and to say that is actually scary. It's been a rare time. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else, to be honest. This is where it's at.
So let's talk about what, you know, the general perception of Pretoria, and this is what we're trying to disprove here, is that Pretoria is a closed-off, very backward, very, almost to a certain extent, a racist place. You've grown up here, and you've already mentioned diversification. So talk to me.
No, I think that's maybe just something that comes with the Blue Bulls or something. I don't know. That's a strange thing for me. I've never really seen that to that, pushed that far, if that makes sense. I mean, obviously, we still have our townships and we still have our like LSMs, and but at the end of the day, if you go to any proper Pretoria party, you'll see someone from any walk of life at it. And I think especially with the parties that we've done, we've had the 18-year-olds party with the 45-year-olds. We've had the hip-hop cats hanging with the metal kids, and that's, I think, the one big unique factor that we have here. I'm not sure if it's like a university or a Blue Bulls thing or what it is, but there is that bit of a proper misconception of what Pretoria is about, and that's, for me, wrong. It's not even close. Yeah.
Okay, so the owner of one of the most Afrikaans bars in Pretoria likes hip-hop, or throws parties at which people who enjoy hip-hop can attend and can party. Pretoria is renowned for its hip-hop scene. I want to chat to Leo. Leo is a hip-hop artist from the 012 who is making waves in the industry. This is what his music sounds like.
I said my peace is for peace, so there's more love in these streets, so there's more loving for me, unless you hating on thee. Most left on secrets to serpents that serve the weak. You feel him juggling false truths when I'm around. Well, peep the sound, it's gonna teach the difference between all of these fiends and me. I mean, I rhyme different, shine different, sublime, feeling the air. Got a heartbreak from my birthday till today, yeah. But scratch that, album coming soon and it's gon' boom. Tell them suckers who been tryna holler that I'm on my solo, cause I do not fuck with them, yeah.
I wanna find out from Leo what his feeling on hip-hop in Pretoria is. Okay, So given hip-hop's roots and given where hip-hop comes from,
yeah,
do you feel as though it's odd now that there are so many
diverse
people listening to hip-hop?
No. I don't think so.
Okay.
Especially just as long as the core of it is being changed. Because right now what's happening is it's evolving.
You yeah.
Know? It's still hip hop, but it's becoming more popular. With things that nowadays rappers don't really rap so much about what's going on in their lives. They'd rather rap about things that they'd want, or something that inspires them, or just a perception of something.
Yeah.
Which brings it back to, like, I think people just always trying to sell something, which is what I think right now, which has taken away from the real aspect of, like, what hip-hop is.
Yeah.
That's what I am going through, or what I see.
I agree with you 100%. I think it's more about being able to relate to the music as
yeah.
opposed to being able to relate to the history of the music.
That's what's happening right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Fast times.
I was fascinated by what Leo was saying regarding the scene and the Pretoria 012 musical scene when it comes to hip-hop. I'm interested to see that he doesn't really focus on race. He focuses more on the subject matter of the music. So I sat down with Katleho Malachi. Katleho Malachi is part owner of Homecoming Events, one of the biggest hip-hop, gom, house, amapiano booking agents in the country. I want to hear what he has to say about diversification in 012's music scene. Right, okay, so let's talk about the diversification, because if you look at Pretoria 10 years ago versus what Pretoria is now, you've got such a wide variety of people who attend Twyfontein, for example, such a wide variety of people who attend all of your gigs, in fact. You've got not only a wide variety of cultures, but you've got a wide variety of races as well. So let's talk about Pretoria as a melting pot. Do you find that it's easy to book for Pretoria based on the music? Or do you think that it comes down to, okay, cool, I'm booking for a specific group of people and there will be other people who come along? So, like, if I book a Gorm gig, for example, like, you're going to get people who come for the amapiano as well. Like, so what I'm trying to say is, and maybe this is a windy way of asking it, but in terms of race, culture, music in Pretoria, do you think everything goes hand in hand, or do you think that if you focus on the music and you get the right gig, you'll get the right people to your gigs?
So I think, you know, for me, when it comes to race, and I mean, I was at Tux during the, you know, when the race culture and all culture was at a very high, and I kept saying to the guys, you know, it's not so much in the sound or the music, it's in comfort. So are you creating comfortable environments? And it goes to all sorts of social causes when you start dealing with the race element. Say, is it comfortable for a person who doesn't fit the perceived demographic or target market of this event? Is it safe for them to come to an event and feel comfortable? Because I think that's where you begin to break those boundaries, and that's why you're seeing it in Pretoria, because people aren't shifting their lineups to say, okay, I'm now, you know, trying to, it's like, yo, I'm still having my rave party, I'm still having my piano party or my house party, but you can come and be comfortable. So black kids can go to Slushy and be comfortable. White kids can come to Twyfontein and be comfortable. Nobody's changing the musical lineup. We're not putting in Soki or, you know, whatever. But it's kind of like you can come here and have an ordinary, normal, carefree experience. So I think music, because music transcends in and of itself. So if somebody sits at home, they listen to everything from rock to amapiano, and I'm a black guy and I'm sitting, I'm listening. So music in and of itself transcends, and where I see it and I resonate with what's on the lineup, I'm inclined to go there. But the question that really gets people is never the music, it's in the culture of the space. Is it an inclusive space? And I think that's where we're getting to a point where events organizers that are more conscious of their duties and responsibilities in as far as creating inclusive spaces are seeing those cross-cultural, you know, benefits of it.
Okay, so both Katleho and Leo mentioned a diversification in the music scene in the 012. But that has to come from transformation, because 20 years ago, there wasn't a lot of diversity at the gigs in Pretoria. And transformation needs to come from somewhere. So I sat down with Dr. Madiba, who is the head of the Transformation Committee at UP, to find out how University of Pretoria is handling transformation.
The Transformation Committee at the University, this is the institutional transformation committee that we are talking about. Each faculty at the university has its own transformation committee. So the institutional one is like drawing from the chairs, but also the top management of each of the faculty. So it has been running for a year with the terms of reference, and for the past year it was basically about coming together to report on any of the activities that are related to transformation in the faculties and to inform one another about what is happening and to have a kind of an institutional overview of what we are doing across. Oh, it's not only faculties, by the way, it is also directorates where you have a transformation committees. So all of these kind of assemble into the institutional one. So, but now moving forward, we are now reworking the terms of reference, because it cannot just be about reporting to ourselves about what we are doing. That does not get us any way, or it, you know, it doesn't help us with the change that we are all looking for. So into 2020, there is a clear agreement that we will rework the terms of reference, and amongst others, what we want to do in the Institutional Transformation Committee is to look at those areas that need change. So we have to identify the areas, that is one, and then look into those areas, like talk through what are the issues in the specific areas. And once we've developed a kind of a deep understanding of what issues are involved, then commit towards actions that we will take as a community. And at the end of the day, we want to see change, like tangible, real change, after we have then set in a number of some actions in motion around those issues.
What misconceptions when it comes to transformation in Pretoria would you like people to no longer have?
Okay, you know, your question is problematic if you say the kind of maybe perceptions that people and to debunk. I wouldn't go, you know, I wouldn't take your angle, because we do have a history in this country, and we all know Pretoria as a city in its days wasn't inclusive. That is a legacy, you know, that we have to live with. So if people have perceptions of exclusion in Pretoria, you cannot just say now it's a myth, we have to debunk it.
Right.
The thing is, the history is still there. And if you have to think about racism, racism is very pervasive. You can change the laws, but if you are that careless, many other practices will still continue, because it is not just the laws or the policies, it is also mindsets. It's, you know, layered privileges that people have lived with for a long while, and people are not just going to give up their privileges easily unless if they are really taken to task. So I wouldn't say there are perceptions. The history of where we come from, you know, gives people hard evidence that we are not talking about a very innocent place as far as racism and exclusion is concerned.
Okay, a big portion of what Dr. Madiba was saying is that we can't ignore the conception that is out there of Pretoria. But what is the conception that's out there of Pretoria? I'm chatting to Linda. Linda is the director of the Love and Sex Expo that has recently taken place in Pretoria. She's not from Pretoria. She's originally from Cape Town. So what is her perception of our beautiful 012 city? So when you were growing up, what was your conception of Pretoria? As in, like, what would you have associated Pretoria with when you were growing up?
Being very Afrikaans.
Right.
Very conservative sort of town. Look, bearing in mind, I hadn't traveled much as a child. So
yeah.
This is purely, you know, naive sort of teenager views. Yes, not at all what I find it to be now. So yeah, probably very like conservative, small town, Afrikaans, rugby, braai on a Saturday and Sunday, you know, very stereotypical, I'd say.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's the perfect answer, because it leads perfectly into my next question. So now that you've been to Pretoria, now that you've seen what we do, and you've seen that we don't all walk around barefoot, although quite a few of us do.
There's no problem with that.
what is your conception of Pretoria now, after working in Pretoria, after being in Pretoria for an extended period of time and needing to be here from a professional standpoint? How would you compare the conception that you had growing up versus your conception of Pretoria now?
Totally different, and yet somewhat the same. So to be completely fair, I don't have a great overview of the whole of Pretoria. Predominantly, my business has been in sort of Menland, which
right.
I think is quite central.
Right.
I would love to see some more of it if I have time. But I think I was so blown away with just it's so cosmopolitan, and I did not expect that for a minute. I remember driving through the first time thinking, oh my gosh, what is waiting for me on the other side?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's beautiful. You know, where I work predominantly is close to, you know, Times Square, and then the main, and just that area on its own. I mean, that's like foodie heaven. You guys have a Starbucks. I don't even think we have a Starbucks in Cape Town. So literally, you know, being there, one could feel like you're actually in, you know, the streets of London.
Yeah.
It's not at all what I had thought. But then, you know, the people are warm and down to earth. And you have people that are you know, I don't know if you know the word bougie.
Yes, in
my opinion.
Yeah.
And then you have people that are walking around, you know, in their rugby shorts and barefoot. And I really just love the, it's like a melting pot of culture.
Right.
From what I've seen. And
right.
I think that's what makes it so amazing. It's this amazing little, you know, cosmopolitan vibe, and everybody just seems to find their niche and fit in with one another.
Yeah.
And certainly being an outsider and coming in, I found the people to be really warm, really welcoming, super helpful. You know, I'm terrible with direction, and I've asked a number of times, and people are, you know, really willing to just, you know, help and go the extra mile. I mean, I came to you guys for an interview a while ago at Tux, and I had absolutely no idea how to get out of the campus. And somebody was like, no, don't worry, I'm going the same direction as you. Just, you know, jump in with me. Don't worry about getting an Uber. And that's so nice because
yeah.
I think it gives, you know, like I mentioned, from coming from Cape Town, you know, but being from a suburb just a little bit out of the city center, it gives such a nice mix of both of those, like city living as well as small town charm.
Linda is talking about a very, very cosmopolitan version of Pretoria. Granted, she only spent a couple of days here and might not see the bigger picture, but she's got a very interesting view on what Pretoria actually is. I've sat down with somebody who grew up in Pretoria, who went to school in Pretoria, and who has a very interesting background when it comes to Pretoria. Tepi is a young broadcaster at Tux FM who went to an Afrikaans high school. I wonder whether she shares Linda's view on Pretoria. Okay, Tepi, so growing up in Pretoria, leaving Pretoria, going elsewhere, having people talk to you about Pretoria,
yeah.
There's obviously a perception and a stigma against Pretoria.
Definitely, definitely. I think growing up in Pretoria, I was exposed to two sides because as a black girl, I went to a white Afrikaans high school. So I experienced that. And at the same time, I also experienced the township side of Pretoria. So you have two sides, which is the white side and the black side. So in high school, it was very protected area because I've been exposed to, you know, people that say that white people only keep you close if they can benefit from having you close. So they would keep me in this safe space of, Tepi, you're so cool. But as soon as I'm around other black people, then there's this kind of like a distance that would come up.
Okay, so let's go back to that phrase. So white people only keep you around when they can benefit from you.
Yes.
Okay, what does that mean?
So in high school, they would use me for like concerts because I could dance, so I could help out with rhythm and choreography and all of that stuff. And there's certain things whereby they would exclude me because then I can't really help out. So it will be stuff like, let's say, calling my mom maybe to come help out, dish out food or stuff like that. They would rather call all the fortunate mummies and the stay-at-home mummies,
right.
You know. So
okay,
it was
so
that kind of
division. Let's just talk about the demographic of your high school then, because you are fairly unique in the sense that there are not a lot of people
yeah.
from your cultural background who would attend a school.
Yeah, Diwe School Menlo Park.
There
was like five of us in matric.
Right. Okay.
Like.
Okay. So let's talk about that. I actually wanted to speak about the demographics of the school. Okay. So there's like five of you in matric. It's an obviously a minority thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your identity now, though, because you speak Afrikaans
yeah,
as a radio broadcaster.
Time, yeah.
Yeah. You speak Afrikaans in Pretoria. There are many different examples of where you use Afrikaans.
Yeah.
But you would not, when people describe somebody who speaks Afrikaans from Pretoria, they are not describing you.
They would not think me. Yeah.
No.
Weird enough, I actually grew up loving Afrikaans more than my own home language or English.
Okay.
And as time went on, I actually started hating it. I think because now what people would do is they would say, "Jy praat so mooi Afrikaans," and they would be shocked and they would
yeah.
want me to continue to
yeah.
see where I would fumble or fall, you know. And I used it to my benefit, especially in terms of radio, like you were saying, getting jobs or interacting with people. Because once you speak their language, it's easier for them to communicate with them, so they feel more comfortable.
I'm not sure what I was expecting. But after speaking to Tepi, I'm left with this underlying feeling of sadness. I feel that the discrimination that she's experienced is unnecessary and vile. And when I feel like this, I turn to one man. There is only one man to turn to in this situation. And he knows all too well the bitter sting of what discrimination can do.
Well, it is music and dancing that makes me at peace with the world. And and at peace with myself.
That is, of course, the legend himself, Nelson Mandela, speaking at a Johnny Clegg concert in France about how music brings people together. So for the final interview of this documentary, I've decided to interview an artist who is renowned in the 012 for having such a diverse range and having such a wide variety of people listen to his music. His name is Apple Gule. This is what his music sounds like.
We're on the island, place we've never been. I want you to, it's time to sink or swim. Sink or swim. Sink or swim. Sink or swim. Won't you come around again? Won't you come around again? Oh yeah. Won't you come around again? Sink or swim. Won't you come around again? Won't you come around again? Oh yeah. Won't you come around again?
When you play different cities in South Africa, is there a noticeable difference between the crowds in Pretoria and say Joburg or Cape Town, for example?
Yeah, definitely. And I think maybe only because I'm an 012 guy.
Right.
Maybe, you know, for them it's almost like they can kind of claim me and be like, hey, this is our dude. But I still think this definitely, you know, people are different in different places. I mean, different environments. If you're born at the coast, you'll have a certain way of living life. You're born, you know, in a very, you know, industrial city, like let's say Colorado, Joburg, you'll be, you know, a certain way. And I think Pretoria is kind of like the best mix of the two, you know, so people are still laid back enough, but they're actually also still serious and also very, like, you know, receptive.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so it brings me to my final question for today. Are you beginning to see that the crowds are beginning to mix a lot more in terms of language?
Yeah, no, 100%. I was actually like talking to my manager about this the other day. It was so nice to finally see a lot of people, like, you know, mixing with each other. And like, you know, a lot of people go to a party and they call it a white party, or they go to a black party or whatever. I think now at least, you know, there's a humongous mix of people going to each other's events.
Yeah.
Hip hop events, house events, a disco event, you know, whatever it may be. You're seeing a very, like, diverse crowd, which is awesome to see, because music should be that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Tax FM 107.2. It's about you. It's about me. It's about now.
In the process of recording this documentary, I've realized how naive I actually am to other people's stories in Pretoria. I've realized that my naivety comes from a place of being sheltered to what other people are going through. I've also realized that this question of whether or not Pretoria is a racist city is something that can't be answered in one documentary. It would take weeks, months even, to capture enough audio to get a better understanding of what Pretoria is actually going through on a daily basis when it comes to racial discrimination. So, although I've tried, I think that it's difficult to answer this question. I also think that the question does not have a simple yes or no answer. In many cases, it would be problematic labeling a city with a population of 1 million people racist or not racist. Certain segments of the city might hold racist views or display racist attitudes, but other sectors of the same population are, in all likelihood, very progressive in their beliefs and attitudes. I'm glad that I did this. I'm glad that I was able to explore this topic. I want to hear from you, though. Email me, mike@tuxfm.co.za, or WhatsApp us right now on 061-720-1072. What is your opinion on, is Pretoria a racist city? 012, are we racist?